Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist for Freedom of Faith. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Preston Washington. I'm your host this evening for the Gist of Freedom. I'm located here in Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm the president of the Afro-American, or the Midwest Afro-American Genealogical Interest Coalition. And I'm also the affiliated with the Missouri State Genealogical Association. Our guest tonight is Anita Hackley Lambert, author, historian, genealogist, here to talk about her ancestor, Freeman Henry Morris Murray, who was one of the co-founders of the NAACP, a member of the original 29 at Niagara with W.E. Du Bois and others, and helped co-found the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Are you there, Anita? Anita's not on the line as yet. We're having a little technical difficulty. But she is here to talk about her book relative to her grandfather. I believe it was her great-grandfather. F.H.M. Murray, First Biography of a Forgotten Pioneer for Civil Justice. And hopefully she'll be online here momentarily. Anita is also involved in a women writers group, Women Writers United, Maryland corporate chapter in the state of Maryland, and hopefully she will share information relative to her involvement there. And whenever you come online, Anita, let us know. We had talked about Mr. Murray previously with a cousin of Anita's, and felt that there was so much more that needed to be said and needed to be explored and shared.
Hello.
About this gentleman. Hello there. Is that Anita?
Yes, how are you?
How are you, Anita?
Great. Technical difficulties, but I've been here.
Okay. Well, we've got it taken care of now. I'm Preston Washington. I'm your host for tonight's show relative to Freeman Henry Morris Murray, who is your ancestor, your great-great-grandfather?
Just great-grandfather, one great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather, okay.
Yes.
Well, start us out. How did you get involved in writing this about your great-grandfather and his involvement in the development of the NAACP and his involvement in fighting for justice here in America? Where would you like to start us?
Okay, I'll start with, it really came from my mom. She was very instrumental in keeping Murray's legacy alive and doing family gatherings, and just other times she'd always tell us what a great person he was, and it seemed almost like a fairy tale, but we used to love to gather around and listen to those stories. Before she passed, she asked me to promise to help her keep a promise, and that was to get a book written on him, since no one had been able to do it So she gave me a box of photos and documents and things, and that's really what started it for me. But I had to validate all of the stories that we were being told because I wanted to make sure that one man could really do all of the things that she was saying that he could do. And when I started the research and everything, you know, Mary had been dead 55 years, and no one had been able to come up with anything to write on him. And I thought, oh, how awful this is. So in diving into the research, it was so much information. It just still boggles my mind today, and I continue to find out new things about his life and his legacy. In my opinion, he was an institution. He was
okay.
Just a really clever businessman and a trailblazer, a visionary and a family man. He was the glue that kept our families together.
He was also an author as well and an art critic.
Yes, he was many. I tell you, he was a teacher, just briefly, and I'd like to go into each one of those if we have time. He was a teacher and a lecturer of art. He was an author. Published author. He was a publisher and the author and the printer of his own book. He was a civil rights advocate, a post Underground Railroad conductor, co-founder and editor of Murray Brothers Printers, co-founder of Murray Palace Casino, co-founder of the Niagara Movement, which you mentioned already, co-editor of the Horizon Magazine, co-founder of the NAACP, co-founder of the Washington Tribune, and it just goes on. There's so many things that he really, really did. His life was in servitude of others rather than for himself.
Tell us a little bit more about, you mentioned post-emancipation Underground Railroad. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, now that was really fascinating for me. My grandmother, his daughter, lived in a little cottage, which was his first home in Alexandria, Virginia, on Alfred Street. And as children, we used to go there all the time, and we would play in the house. And there was, in that house, a little wall within a wall, and it would surround from one room to another. You could go in this little room, and we used to play hide-and-go-seek in there. So it didn't mean very much to us at the time, except that it was a lot of fun. And then in the backyard of that, there was a well. And we were always throwing rocks down, and we could never hear the water. And we would think that, oh, it must be so deep. We just can't hear this water. So as we got older, my mother started telling us stories, and then other family members started telling us stories about what Murray was doing with that well. And actually what it was is that he had that house, and directly across the street from that house, he purchased another house, which he actually rebuilt, remodeled himself. So what Murray had done was, because when he was young in Ohio, and that's a whole other story, and it's all in the book, and I hope people will buy it. And if they're interested, they can get it at AnitaHackleyLambert.com or Amazon.com. But Murray had witnessed
Anita,
as a young
Anita, could you repeat your website address again?
Sure.
And kind of slow it down just a bit, because I'm sure some of our listeners are probably trying to write it down.
Okay, it's just like the author's name on the book, AnitaHackleyLambert.com.
Okay, great.
Okay. And I am excited, so I apologize. I will slow it down a bit.
Okay. But just take a couple of deep breaths, and you'll be okay.
Yes. This is just a heartthrob of mine because it's a fascinating story. But when Freeman Murray was a youngster, he attended several debates with his grandfather, his maternal grandfather, who raised him after his parents died, and they were coming home from a debate. His grandfather was actually a conductor on the Underground Railroad in Mount Healthy, Ohio, and Freeman was a part of that during that time. So when they were coming from this debate, they witnessed a black man who had been beaten and hanged from a tree. And he was just a bloody mess. And it had such an impact on his life that when he came to Virginia, to Alexandria, Virginia, and he built his own home, or rebuilt the home that he bought, he painted his library and his study blood red. nobody could really understand for a long time why it was blood red. It was blood red to him to remind him never to forget the atrocity that occurred then and all the lynchings that was going on during the time that, you know, where he was there. So he birthed this idea, and I'm sure all of it started back with the information he learned from his grandfather. So the well was actually a dry well. And under the cover of night, well, first I understand that when they wanted to hold a tea party, they had to go and let the people in the town know that they wanted to hold a tea party. That's what blacks had to do. So they would let them know that they were going to hold a tea party. And under the cover of darkness, two of his sons were lawyers. They would go to the jail and get people who were slated for hanging, whatever legalese they had to use to get them out. The ones that they could get out, they got them out under the cover of night. They would sneak them in. They would go down into this well that had a ladder attached to the inside of it, buried inside of it, and go under the street and come up under the dirt floor in the second house. And in that area, they would take them through the kitchen, which had a pantry and had a stairwell going upstairs and up into his attic. And he would take them in that attic, and there were cubicles up there, and they were color-coded cubicles. And those cubicles were colored because depending upon which route the person was going to take, some would go to Canada, some would go to Ohio, and then there was another, Indiana, I believe, was the other state that they sent them, other place they sent them to. And so they would feed them, and they would clothe them. His second wife, Delilah Murray, was a professional seamstress and wig maker. So she would turn the men, they would dress as women, and the women would dress as men. And when the parties would leave at night in the carriages, they would put these people in there as a part of their party, take them up to Washington Street where the water line was, and there would be a boat waiting for them there, and they would take them to the places of safety. And he did that from 1998 up until the 1940s, and he was still helping them. So he was very elusive in his
Repeat those years again. I think you said
1898 up until the 1940s.
Okay.
1898.
Okay. And what city was that in again?
Alexandria, Virginia.
Virginia.
Right, and they have torn both of those houses down and have put parking lots there. And my goal before I leave this earth is to help get historical markers for those two sites.
For those two houses there in Alexandria.
Right.
Okay. Well, you said this was post-emancipation. The Civil War ended in 1865.
Wow.
And he was still operating an underground railroad some 30 years later?
Yes, because of the lynchings. His goal was to save the people that were being hanged from lynching, because many of them were, you know, falsely accused and those kind of things. The ones that were innocent, those were the ones. That was his plight, was to help them and to lead them to safety. So that's what his underground railroad was for.
Wow. Do we know how many people he saved from the noose?
I really don't know how many people. I have posted information out, so that if any families are aware of any of that information, if anyone could call me to let me know if they know anything about that, because I really want to expound on that.
And what number would they contact you?
They can call me either email or phone number.
Either
phone
way,
number.
Let's give them both, if it's okay with you.
It's fine. Phone number would be 240-462-4128. 240-462-4128. Or they can email me at alambert.ics, that's I as in Isaac, C as in car, S as in Sam, @gmail.com.
Okay, so that's 240-462-4728?
4128.
4128. Thank you. And the email is A. Lambert, IC, S as in Sam, at gmail.com.
It'll be dot ICS, yes.
Dot ICS.
Right.
Okay. Incredible, incredible. He was helping individuals wrongly accused for various crimes, slated to be hung. And
yes.
Now, how did he manage to get them out so that he could whisk them away? You said he used some legal maneuvers, or was he just outright breaking them out?
Sons. Yes. What was interesting, he had two sons that were attorneys. And he used, I don't know what he did earlier on, but I do know that they had this, he used his Alexandria home newspaper where he posted and only had like two copies of the newspaper where he would post announcements and things that sounded like just a regular town meeting or something like that within the community, but it was supposedly had codes in it to tell them where they were supposed to meet and what time they were supposed to meet. And so I guess the gathering of those secret meetings would determine who would go and get these people out of the jails. So
okay.
That I don't have the solid background on that part, but I do know during the later years his sons were involved in helping him to do that.
I see. And then now, did he fail in getting anyone out that was slated to be lynched and was finally lynched?
I don't know
know,
but I would imagine that that's very true because I wouldn't imagine that he'd be able to get them all out.
Okay. Now, and you said that they would be removed to the one house. The rooms were color-coded. Females dressed as up in the attic. Females dressed as males and males as females. And then where were they? Oh, we were taken down to a boat and whisked away to...
Yeah, they were given the little carriages as people were leaving, and they would take them down to the end of Washington Street, right where the water was, and there'd be a boat waiting there for them.
Okay. And some would go to Canada, maybe some to Ohio. Do we know of any connections along the way? Were there any stations, so to speak?
Well, I'm sure there were, but none that I was able to, you know, find out about. So if anyone is listening and they know anything about that, give me a call. Please.
Okay, yeah, certainly. Very fascinating. Fascinating piece of history there.
Yes, very interesting.
So now, he was an art critic, and he wrote a piece relative to a statue or a work there in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Well,
can you tell us about that?
Well, I don't specifically know all of the details. I think Freeman Magruder did a real good job in explaining a lot of that as far as his what he did with his artwork. But I do know that Albert Guillaume, the historian, and he wrote a lot about, used the information from Murray's book because until then he wasn't getting the popularity that he deserved from the book. He was one of the first black art historians, if not the first one, to even go into the depths that he did of securing and talking to the actual, you know, sculptors and artists as it was back then to get information as to why they did what they did, what their incentive was for doing it, and he was able to write his interpretations based upon that. So he didn't just look at an image and say, oh, this is my interpretation, but he actually spoke to the individuals that were responsible for doing the product.
Okay. And he was also critical of a piece there in Lincoln Park in Washington, D.C., something called the Emancipation Group.
Yes, yes. And I can't elaborate on that either, but I didn't get into all of the things with his art book, but mostly I was covering the other areas of his life. So,
What was another incredible part covered in your book about his life?
Yes. Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, Murray himself, I think people the listeners really need to understand, you know, a part of his character and how he got to be who he was. And it all it involved, you know, from his growing up and his the rejection of his father, who was a Scotsman, who went against the Murray clan belief that, you know, you shouldn't marry anybody outside of their own, you know, ethnic background. And his father, who played among slaves on their family plantation and, you know, farm, grew up, and he had no problems with all of the races. So he married a mulatto. His name was John Mary, John M. Mary. And when he did that, he lost his birthright, and he was kicked out from the Klan. And so when Murray found, Freeman Murray found that out, he was very upset that people would look at the color of a person's skin for that. So that had a profound effect on him back then. But he did not let those kinds of things stop him. Instead, he had a philosophy and a belief system. There were four sayings that my mother would always tell me that he used, and that was, the only way to keep a secret is to tell no one. And we're all familiar with the one, never let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. But he said, you can become as big as you can dream, so how big can you dream? And then to never give up, never give in, never stop until you win, win, win. So that was his drive, and that was his philosophy, that no matter what you go through, he just believed that regardless of race, gender, or any restrictions imposed on anybody, that you could rise above the circumstances. You could become successful in your life, in business, and in the service to others. So that was the really the backbone of his belief, and that's what he stood on, and that's what he taught to his children, you know, to his family, and it's a lot of what we live by today.
Anita, tell us a little bit more about his name, Freeman Henry Morris Murray. That has a significant meaning in history, does it?
Well, Freeman Henry Morris was a professional tailor in Ohio, and John Murray and Freeman Morris worked together doing quite a few things in the business industry and as well as in the abolition movement. There were other things that Freeman Morris did do, but I can't recall those things now. Also, I think Magruder did make mention of it in his interview the other day. So, and I wanted to ask you, are these interviews going to be posted on the net so people still can have access to it?
Oh, yeah, they're archived at the website, Blog Talk Radio, and individuals have access to these interviews all the time. Did your ancestors sue the state of Ohio over voting rights?
My ancestors, to my knowledge, did not. I couldn't find anything to reflect that.
Okay. By the way, the blog is blackhistoryblog.com. That is blackhistoryblog.com. And our listening audience can find all the shows done on this Blog Talk Radio there. And if they want to call in with a question or comment, they can call us at 347-324-5552. The Blog Talk Radio history can also be accessed via iTunes if people have that hookup. So there's plenty of access there relative to the archive. Okay, well, Anita, tell us then a little bit about the Tribune, the newspaper.
Well, if you don't mind, okay, the Tribune newspaper, it was co-founded by F.H.M. Murray, and it was run, you know, by his three sons, Raymond Freeman and Morris, I believe it is. They were very instrumental in following their father because when they were little and after their mom died, I don't know if you know the story or not, Freeman bought as a Christmas gift a used printing press for his children, for Freeman, his son Freeman, to keep him busy because he stayed housebound a lot. And his son took the thing apart and made it better than it was, and they launched the Murray Brothers printing company at that time, and they were all under the age of 15. And they became so successful, one had appointed himself business manager, the other one was the marketer, and then the other one was the printer. And they were doing business cards and stationeries and everything like that. So that's how the sons got started with Murray Brothers Printing. And then later on, when they co-founded the Washington Tribune, it became one of the most popular circulated black newspapers in the nation's capital. And it was quite successful, and it lasted for many, many years. And so that's a tribute just to be able to hold on to that. And they did print a lot of the truth, black information for the communities and things like that. And quite frankly, I was sad when it did close. I think it lasted over 60 years.
Okay. And I would remind our listeners that at the website there is a picture of the Murray Brothers with their 12 employees standing in front of their printing press. Now, did you say that paper is still in progress? If so, what's the name of the paper now? What's it called now?
No, well, the Washington Tribune was actually sold to the Afro-American newspaper.
Oh, that's in Baltimore.
Yes,
okay.
They're out of Baltimore now. Yes, they are.
Okay.
Now, if I might add something, too, within that building itself, that building was built from the ground up by the Murray family and some of their friends, and it was one of the first strongest structures to be built in the Washington District area. And it's also commendable that during that time they were able to be able to finance it and to even do something like that. The building still stands today, so it was built very, very well. Within that building, with the Murray Brothers Printing Company, Freeman Morris Murray also had his law office there, and upstairs, I understand, it was the Murray Palace Casino. Now, even though it has the name casino on it, it was like a dance hall and a ballroom, and when it first opened, it was considered the Black Hollywood, where entertainers like Pearl Bailey, Duke Ellington, and others performed there. People would dress up in formal wear, their best clothes, and be in lines just waiting to get inside. So the Murrays brought a lot of entertainment into the Washington District area. Not only with that, but being as industrious as he was and as his family turned out to be, they brought more entertainment than that. They created jobs. They provided training. Murray was very responsible for providing training to the people that he brought into his business. So he was more than just, you know, just a visionary in a sense or a pioneer or a civil rights advocate. He was really sold out to help people and to inspire them and to train them so that they could, too, could have a very good career. And I thought that that was very much worth mentioning because Washington, D.C., they don't have much that's out that acknowledges Freeman Henry Morris Murray. And I think that it's a shame and it should be done. And my goal is to see that it will get done.
Is the building still black-owned?
To my knowledge, it was bought by a Jewish person, and I shouldn't say they're black-owned, but I don't know who owns it now, but no, it's not black-owned to my knowledge.
But the Afro-American newspaper is still black-owned?
It's still black-owned, yes. But they don't use that building for their paper.
Okay. Do you have any photos or artifacts relative to the Murray Brothers establishment there, the casino and whatnot?
Well, I don't have very much on it. Pretty much what I came across in my mother's documentation were letters on the Murray Brothers printer's letterhead to different constituents that they were involved with and things like that. I don't have much outside of that. And newspaper articles that talked about the Murray Palace Casino and how they leased it from time to time to, you know, football organizations and youth clubs and different things like that.
Okay. Do you know if they left any heir property any property to their heirs?
Well,
any of
one
the
thing one thing I can say about that is that will probably be another conversation for another day. I do know that Freeman owned a retreat property in Highland Beach in Annapolis, and it was like two doors or maybe three doors up from the Frederick Douglass house there, and that was in the family for many, many years. Whether it's still in the family today or not, I do not know. As I said, Freeman was the glue to our family, and as far as heirs are concerned, more than likely that group or branch of the Murrays that were running the Washington Tribune and what have you, they would know more about that.
You think they might turn that into a museum?
It would be a grand thing if they would do that. You know, turning something into a museum, I guess that's something, that's a consideration, would be a great idea if they would do that.
Most assuredly, if they have any kind of property, you know, it should probably be turned into a museum.
Absolutely.
Now, F.H.M. Murray was your first book.
Yes.
Do you have any other books that you've written, or do you have any coming out?
Well, after a long delay, I'm still working on a book that I hope to come out early in 2013, and that's Barry A. Murray Biography in a New Dimension. That Barry Murray is the great-grandson of Freeman Murray also, and he never met him and didn't know much about his grandfather, but he did walk in his footsteps and launched his own newspaper, and he was a radical, you know, for civil rights, justice, and speaking the truth and supporting black causes, and I hope to have that done, like I said, early in 2013. I also have another manuscript that's in editing right now, and that is a supernatural journey of a near-death experience that I had. So hopefully that will come out also in 2013.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about, or tell us something about the magazine and also Mr. Murray's relationship with W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yeah, that was an interesting time for me to delve into the letters and the articles and the different information that I found about the relationship between Freeman Murray and W.E.B. Du Bois, as well as L.M. Hershaw and Trotter, William Monroe Trotter. Now, with the Horizon magazine, it was a magazine of the color line, and it was brought out to support the Niagara movement, to discuss the activities and different issues associated with the Niagara movement. Murray was a co-editor along with Du Bois and L.M. Hershaw in writing that. He was also the co-editor, if I didn't say that already, but he printed it and published it from the Murray Brothers Printing Press. He was very much involved and active in the Niagara movement and wanted to continue to, you know, work for the advancement of the colored people.
Mm-hmm. And that was a mutual relationship. Did it ever get testy? As I understand, maybe his relationship with Booker T. Washington guy?
Yes, that was really interesting, too, because the relationship, let's see, I'll do with the Du Bois one first. I'll talk about that just a bit. His relationship with W.E.B. Du Bois became strained after a while. Du Bois had a very different agenda after a while, and as we know, he was a prolific writer, and he had many, many things that he was involved in, and it did put a strain on the relationship between Murray and Du Bois, which is also in the book, and the writings from their own letters describe how they started to feel about one another. So I'll leave that open for the listeners to get a copy and take a look at that because it's very in-depth there. But as far as Murray's relationship in Canada with Booker T. Washington is that Du Bois and Freeman Murray did not like the philosophy that Booker T. Washington had because both of them believed and they knew that they were men entitled to equal rights under the Constitution and they should not have to settle to go back to an agriculture industry and farm and wait for them to acknowledge that they are good people. They just wanted to stand up and be men and be represented for that, you know, for what they were. But also one of the tactics that Freeman Murray seemed to use was he would be very brash and bold and outspoken in these areas, and what that did, what that kept, it deflected attention off of him for him to continue with his Underground Railroad. Had anyone found out about that back then, he and his entire family would have been dead. I wouldn't be here today. None of us, the Murrays, would be here today. That lineage would have been gone. So he was very good at having a real broad and a boastful attitude to speak out and to be heard, but yet at the same time, it was never related to what he was doing in that area. So I applaud him for that.
You sent our producer a photograph or a poster of the original members of the Niagara Group, and already people are inquiring about how to get a copy or purchase a copy of that photo. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The University of Massachusetts, under W.E.B. Du Bois papers, they have the that on their website. And they can find it right there and get a copy.
Okay. Do you can download it from there, or you
can
make a purchase there?
Yes, they can download it from there. Right.
Okay. And what was that website again?
It is. I'm not sure of the exact. But it's the University of Massachusetts.
Oh, the University of Massachusetts. So if we get to
right.
that website,
right.
and they have a link there to W.E. Du Bois.
W.E.B. Du Bois, right. Oftentimes
okay.
it's on the front link, and since we're getting closer to Black History Month, it may be on the front page. If not, they can just search for it and find it.
Okay.
And then I want to say with all that F.H.M. Murray was doing and his outspokenness, they tried to get him fired from his job at the War Department, and everything they tried to do to silence him failed, so he ended up keeping that job for, I think, 64 years until he retired.
He worked for the War Department for 64 years?
Yes, he received. He was the first Afro-American to take and pass the first civil service exam in the United States. He was offered a position. He was in Ohio at the time. He was offered a position with the War Department, and that's what brought him to Alexandria, Virginia, and he worked there as a clerk for 64 years.
How did he meet W.E. Du Bois? How did he meet those folks, the original 29?
Well, he used to go to a lot of debates. He used to follow Frederick Douglass, and he became a real close friend. I don't know, can't say if it was at one of those meetings, but as a result of him holding meetings and going to the debates and meetings, he became a real good friend with William Monroe Trotter, and I'm sure the others were just, you know, Ida B. Wells. All of them were in his circle, as well as when they had the different types of things at the churches where they would hold conferences and lectures and things like that. So exactly when he met them, that is not clear.
Hmm. You know, when we had your cousin on the show, he was telling us about a caller, I believe out in Indianapolis, Indiana, who used F.H.M. Murray's book on art to challenge the erection of a derogatory statue that they were attempting to put up there in that city. Have you heard any? Do you know about that? And if you do, have you heard any more about it?
Truthfully, I don't know about that. So I can't add anything to that.
Okay. So tell us a little bit more about your book. What else, what little tidbits, without giving away too much, can you tell us about the book?
Well, it has illustrations in it, and it as a reference to refer back to things. But I think the most tidbit in it to me is to be able to know where he came from, follow his lineage down, and see how his character was molded. But more than that is when you get to the chapters on the Niagara Movement to really see what he thought, how he felt, and how that translated the communication between him, W.E.B. Du Bois, L.M. Hershaw. There was a lot of controversy going on back and forth in there, and how he felt that he was betrayed for all his work and all his effort that he was doing, that he was sort of kicked to the curb, if you will, and not appreciated. And he wanted the Niagara Movement and things to continue on. So when they came together and decided to do the NAACP, Murray signed up as a co-founder with the group that went in for that, and those were several of the original Niagara Movement members at the time. He watched it very closely, and he didn't like what he saw, the way that things were going on. He felt they were being undermined and not fair in what they were doing, in the way it was, and he was being excluded from a lot of things at that time. So when it became not all African American, he didn't trust a lot of the stuff that was coming into it, so he got out of it, out of the NAACP.
Oh, okay.
And when I tried to contact the NAACP to get an acknowledgement for Murray being a co-founder on it, I get a lot of literature from them, but there's no response as to that.
So you're not getting any response?
Relative to F.H.M. Murray and the NAACP.
Okay, and you say all they send you are what, brochures, pamphlets?
They send me, let me know, you know, to become an active member, the upcoming things are coming on, to help cast my vote for an issue that they're associated with and things like that. But I'm still waiting for them to get back to me and reply as to what information they have on F.H.M. Murray, how come they can talk about W.E.B. Du Bois, but they don't talk about F.H.M. Murray. I haven't seen it. I've been following them along. I'm not going to say they have never done it, but when, when I'm looking for it, I've never seen it.
Do you think he might have quit because of too many white people in the group?
I think it was more because of the, not necessarily that. I know that he didn't trust a lot of them, but I won't say he didn't trust any, because he judged a man by his character rather than, you know, the content of his character. But so I don't think that that was the issue. It's just that rather than them keeping the fight going for civil rights and justice for African Americans, they were doing other kind of legal issues, and not just, he wanted to remain like what the Niagara Movement was about, I believe, more to fight for the cause of blacks, be able to stand up as a man, be counted as a man, be treated as a man, be treated equally and fair. So he wanted to keep that focus going, but they were going in other kind of areas as well, and that was distasteful to him.
Well, they were very strong in the anti-lynching movement during that time, were they not?
Yes, and what Murray did, he hooked up with Ida B. Wells. They were very much involved in that as a part of his Underground Railroad effort that he was doing. So he had his own focus when he left the NAACP to keep pushing what he was doing, because I think he felt that it was more productive to save those that he could save rather than go through the politics of everything that they were doing.
Do you think your ancestor would...
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
He was proactive. He wasn't waiting for paperwork to come out. He wasn't a paper shuffler, if you will, and he wanted to make sure that he was doing something to help people. You can talk about lynching, you can put in protest about lynching, you can do all those kind of things, but if you're not actually helping a person, somebody get out, someone go to freedom, then I guess that was more paramount to him at that time.
Do you think he would be satisfied with the results of the NAACP today in terms of intervention?
No.
What do you think he would be most dissatisfied about?
Well, I don't think he, I don't know, I can't say for certain, but my feeling is that they didn't follow through on a lot of the things that what they initially started out to do and sort of digressed and went into other areas. I do know that myself lately, they have been supporting black causes and things that have been coming up against blacks and speaking out on that and trying to help people and save people from where they feel they're being mistreated, black people that is, from how they're being mistreated and justice is not being served. They have stepped up to the plate over the last couple of years that I have noticed that he would be pleased about. But prior
what
to
would
that,
be,
yes.
What would be some of those other things that he would like to have seen them go into?
Well, I couldn't speak on that because I really don't have all of that knowledge and all that information before me right now. So I couldn't really address that.
Okay. Did he favor taxation with representation over integration?
Well, would he
that
favor
is, it? Well, the development of, you know, black communities as opposed to integrating into the mainstream.
Well, I think that, go ahead.
Well, you know, integration into the mainstream or the development of black communities, the village. Some people would say that integration caused the loss of the village, you know, the black village and the black economic status, a dollar traveling through the black community for 7 years before it left that community, and now it's about a 2-year turnaround. So,
well, I would imagine him as him being a visionary and a person with foresight that change was imminent, and it always is, and it's coming. And some things, we have to ride that wave. We may not like it all, and some of it we grow to appreciate, and some of it we may never like. So I think we would probably have that kind of an attitude about it.
Okay. We're about running out of time, Anita. Do you have any closing remarks? Is there anything, one final thing you would like for our listeners to hold on to and repeat your contact information again?
Just hold on to the fact that F.H.M. Murray and others like him, there are many out there yet who have not received the recognition for their own contributions to society as a whole, even in your own family. Don't let that history be wiped out from you. Hold on to letters and receipts and different types of information. Put them in a shoebox or somewhere where you can maintain it. Find out and ask if any of your family members were ever involved in anything. You may think it's small now. It may not matter today, but later on you realize it was very important. And once the information is gone, it's gone. So hold on to that thought. We all have history in our families. We all have, and it's important, and people need to hear the stories that you have to tell. So I encourage you always, even if it's not in a book, it could be in a press release, it could be in a blog, it could be contact someone else who can help you get that information out. We need to know the truth behind the African Americans in this country and what they have done to help us do what we do today, live the way we live today, and be who we are. So you can get my book, again, at AnitaPackleyLambert.com or from Amazon.com. And I wish you all well, and be sure, don't hesitate to email me at AnitaLambert.ICS. That's I as in ice, C as in car, S as in Sam, at gmail.com. And I thank you for listening.
Do you have any book signings coming up? Any family reunions? Any comments for black educators?
Not at the moment, but give me a call back in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure I will.
Okay.
And
Anita,
if you find that on my website, I will post it out there.
Hello, Anita. I think we have a caller.
Okay.
Can you hang on a minute? Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello?
Yeah, what's your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, I'm calling from Washington, D.C. This is Brother Maury Amai with the Universal Negro Improvement Association, founded by Marcus Garvey.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to thank Sister Anita for putting this book together, because I had done an extensive degree of research on the Garvey movement in Washington. And in the process, I certainly had to go across much of the material from the Tribune that, F.H.M.M. Murray, I guess you say, was responsible for publishing. But, you know, I've seen a lot of his work with the early on with the Niagara movement, and I'm glad she addressed a couple things that always been on my heart when it comes to Lafayette McKean, Hershaw, William Henry Harrison Hart, and other Washingtonians who were critical in developing this Niagara movement. Many of them, people always say that the Niagara movement was a forerunner to the NAACP, and that is a marginalization of the Niagara movement, because the Niagara movement was a forerunner to the newly revived National Equal Rights League as well, and it was a forerunner also to the UNIA. I mean, these all were institutions that many of the great people in the Niagara movement, like William H.H. Hart, James Robert Lincoln Diggs, you know, Reverend James Robert Lincoln Diggs and others, later joined the UNIA. People like Monroe Trotter later joined, you know, and headed the National Equal Rights League, and some went and joined the Jewish-funded and founded NAACP. But all these entities were drawn from membership from this early, you know, black civil rights movement, and the movement was extremely extensive, and there were a whole lot of important pioneers who definitely are unsung heroes of mine, you know, that I'm glad, you know, this story is finally coming to the surface a bit. And, you know, I certainly look forward to the book, and I agree with everything that I've heard you say in depicting that's your great-grandfather?
Great-grandfather, yes.
Yeah, okay, beautiful, great-grandfather. Yeah, I mean, he seemed a very strong man. He actually supported Garvey in a couple of important times in the history of the Garvey movement when others were trying to come out and attack. He came to Mr. Garvey's defense. You know, there were some times when he was critical as well, but to a large extent, he was not, you know, Mr. Garvey wasn't big on, I mean, he had a civil rights and, you know, kind of aspect of the Garvey movement, but, you know, the Garvey movement was a lot larger than just the civil rights movement. To many, the civil rights movement was a little too tame to actually ensure justice for our people. And, you know, justice was not just a civil rights issue. You know, certainly human rights, civil rights are important, but, you know, we need economic justice as well. And the NAACP wasn't trying to actually develop businesses and, you know, certain things they just weren't doing. They had a focus that to some extent was kind of narrow, and many of the opinion that they were being exploited by a certain group of people is kind of a buffer organization, you know, for them. And they weren't really directly, you know, looking out for the interests of people of African descent. So it's,
well,
you know,
caller,
it's important to tell
that story. Caller, you think maybe you should invite Anita to come speak at some of your events there?
Oh, yeah. You know, we said we have events in Washington. Are you in Washington, Anita?
I'm in the metropolitan area, yes.
Oh, okay, okay, good. Okay. Yeah, because
you have her do you have her contact information?
No, I don't. I heard the email. I'm sure. Are you on Facebook?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Is it the whole name spelled out? Anita Hackley?
Lambert, yes.
Yeah, okay, okay. I will try to friend you up, Maury Amai Kamau. And, you know, we have periodic, you know, mass meetings and different rallies, and I definitely like to promote the book. I like to, you know, get a copy myself and, you know, make sure, you know, we learn more about, you know, because, you know, Mr. Murray was a person that you couldn't really even discuss black history in Washington to any serious measure. Yes.
Caller, would you spell your name? I think a number of us would like to friend you on Facebook.
Oh, sure, no problem. I'm on the Leslie Just, you know, Freedom, one of the ones tagged also on Facebook for this program. But my name is spelled M-W-A-R-I-A-M-A. That's
Got
my
it.
First name. Okay, so Kamau, K-A-M-A-U is the second, but It's not too many more of mine, so you should be fine with just the first name. But yeah, I mean, Mr. Murray was so pivotal, you know, and more than just like say the newspaper and the civil rights.
Right,
even
in that
job.
I appreciate your support, but we're out of time, and we're going to have to sign off. And
yes,
maybe we'll get together at a future date and maybe get you on the show and talk about what you're doing up there in the D.C. area. Okay?
Never a problem. I thank you, Sister Anita.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miss Anita. Thank you, Mr. Camus. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.